Radio Prague News.
Members of the Civic Democratic Party have criticized Topo 9 Deputy Leader Miroslav Kalousek and others from the party for paralyzing the functioning of the government over the Batura case. The finance minister has suggested that tax reforms to be discussed by the government could be approved even in his absence. Local municipalities in the Šumava area have said they will hold a happening in light of the continuing standoff between the Šumava National Park management and ecological activists. Members of the Civic Democratic Party have criticized Topo 9 Deputy Leader Miroslav Kalousek and others from fellow coalition member Topo 9 for threatening to walk out unless the Education Minister Josef Dobeš or his controversial aide Ladislav Batura resigns. On Friday, several of them, including the head of the Civic Democrats Deputies Clubs, Bingek Stanjura, echoed earlier statements by the Prime Minister, saying it was unacceptable for a single state official to, quote, paralyze the functioning of the government. Mr. Batura became an issue for coalition members Topo 9 after insulting its chairman, the foreign minister Karel Schwarzenberg, on Facebook, where he called him a, quote, poor little old man. Topo 9's Miroslav Kalousek said earlier that none of the party's ministers would attend government sessions until either Minister Dobeš or Batura himself stepped down. The latest is not Mr. Batura's first brush with controversy. The official, who also heads an ultra-conservative civic association, recently made headlines for vocal opposition to a gay pride festival in the capital. In related news, Education Minister Josef Dobeš, who sent an apologetic text message to the foreign minister earlier this week, has further distanced himself from Ladislav Batura's words. The minister said on Friday that he had given the HR had precise instructions on future public conduct and made clear that if the advisor failed to heed them, he would be replaced. Also in related news, Finance Minister Miroslav Kalousek has denied allegations by coalition members Public Affairs that steps taken by Topo 9 in the Batura case are only an excuse to stall the approval of tax reforms at the government's next meeting. The party pointed especially to the introduction of new taxes on gambling. The head of Public Affairs, Radek Jon, maintains that if the reforms are not passed by the end of the year, the government will lose 7 billion crowns. The finance minister responded on Friday by saying that he was in no way against the proposal, which was from his own ministry, and he said he would not mind if the reforms were agreed by the cabinet, even in his absence. Local municipalities in the Šumava area have said they will hold a happening on Sunday expressing support for the Šumava National Park management, at odds with ecological activists who for weeks this summer held blockades to try and prevent continued logging. Activists chained themselves to trees in protected areas of the park to prevent loggers from felling trees or stripping bark, steps they say are illegal. The move has been commissioned by the park's management to try and further prevent devastation by the bark beetle. Representatives organizing Sunday's event say that they expect several hundred people to take part. I'm Jan Wellinger, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio, with me, Jan Richter. In today's show, a new book explores the Russian view of the 1968 invasion of Czechoslovakia. Then we'll have a roundup of the latest business news and later learn about a 400-year-old cherub named Xavier, the main character of a new webcomic called The Sorrowful Puto of Prague. All that and more coming your way, so please stay tuned. Ahead of the 43rd anniversary of Czechoslovakia's invasion by the Soviet Union and her main allies on the 21st of August 1968, a new book offers a hitherto little explored perspective on this traumatic chapter of Czech history. Titled Invasion 1968, The Russian View, it explores Russians' attitudes towards the Warsaw Pact invasion and the trauma that some of the Soviet soldiers involved in it experienced in its wake. Sara Borówka spoke to the editor, former Russian correspondent for Czech TV, Josef Pazderka, about the Russian experience of the historic event, their view of the 1968 invasion today, and what inspired him to put the book together in the first place.
As part of my regular job as a Moscow correspondent for Czech TV, I visited Russian soldiers, Russian journalists, Russian dissidents who either participated in the invasion or who follow that very closely. And I was amazed how emotional is this event on the Russian side.
And your book is titled Invasion 1968, The Russian View. So what exactly is in the book, and is there any way to sum up the Russian perspective on the invasion?
We Czechs and Slovaks, we follow the invasion very, very closely. And after more than 40 years, we know about ourselves, about our emotions, about our views and experiences from the invasion. Very much, I would say, well, we don't know about the other side. There are some historical studies about what the Kremlin wanted and how they sent the soldiers. But we don't know the faces. We don't know the emotions. We don't know what the soldiers could know about Czechoslovakia before they were sent here, how they went through the Soviet propaganda and what impact it had on them, how they were confronted with the reality and what was their reaction. And also, we didn't know many stories about Soviet journalists who were present in Prague and who refused to call it brotherly help, who refused to portray Czechoslovakia as a bastion of counter-revolution, as it was called from the Kremlin, and then sent immediately back to Moscow, and they lost their jobs and so on. We knew about the dissidents who protested on the Red Square, but the movement behind it was much, much bigger. There was a very strong link between Moscow and Prague among the Soviet intelligentsia who followed the Prague Spring very, very closely. And the magic date, 21st of August 1968, was also a very big trauma for them. It was basically, as it's called in the book, it was the end of the illusions that any reform can happen within the Soviet system.
And you were the editor of this book. Maybe you could point out a few articles, chapters, or elements of it that you found interesting or surprising.
I want to point out that there are not only my interviews with the soldiers and journalists and the dissidents, but there are also very, very valuable studies from other authors. I would name a Russian scholar of Czech origin, Tomáš Glanz. There are some army historians, Daniel Povolny. There are very interesting photos of Josef Koudelka, Karel Cudlin, and many others.
Now, your book offers the views of Russians who lived through the time when the invasion happened. What about the younger generation of Russians? How much do they know about 1968, and what is their view of it?
The invasion of 1968 is only a drop in the ocean of the Soviet legacy. There are much, much bigger problems and much, much bigger crimes that the Russians still cannot face and stand up to. So my reflection of this is straight and simple. Most of the current Russians don't know that anything like invasion 68 happened.
Sara Borovka was talking there to Josef Pazderka, the author of Invasion 1968, The Russian View. Now I'm joined in the studio by Christian Falvey with the latest business news.
Three Czech ministries have allegedly made an as-yet informal decision to push for partly free emissions vouchers for energy producers between 2013 and 2020. The Reuters news agency reported the news, citing a source within the Czech government, whose current plan counts on charging all assignments of emission vouchers. According to Reuters' source, the ministries of the Environment, Labour and Finance have agreed to take advantage of exemptions from European Union rules for the period, thus scrapping the current plan of selling all vouchers at auction. Czech energy producers would reportedly get 108 million vouchers during that period, which currently trade at around 16 euros.
The preliminary figures given by the Czech Statistical Office this week show that the Czech economy grew by 2.4% in the second quarter of 2011. Compared with the previous quarter, the statistic marks an increase in the gross domestic product of 0.2%. Exports, as usual, were the major force behind the growth, though analysts say that this was hindered by a drop in consumption. The Czech economy is expected to grow at a slower pace for the rest of the year, just like the economies of Germany and the rest of the Eurozone. Some analysts even believe that there might be a drop in GDP growth in the third or fourth quarter of this year. Employment, meanwhile, was up year on year by 0.7% for the quarter after adjusting for seasonal effects, hardly a change from the last quarter.
The Municipal Court of Prague has approved the sale of lottery company Sazka at the behest of the bankruptcy trustee. A tender for the purchaser will be announced in the coming days, and the decision means that absolutely anyone can make a bid as long as they meet the basic conditions set by the trustee, namely a half-billion-crown deposit. The likely competitors will be Sazka's main creditors, Petr Kellner's PPF and the multinational financing group KKCG. Some interested parties, though, like investment group Penta, have criticized the use of a tender, which they consider a dubious and non-transparent way of selling the company, and had been looking forward to a public auction. Lottery company Synox says it does not know if it will compete in the tender, as it considers the conditions scandalous, aimed at allowing Sazka to be controlled by PPF and KKCG, rather than maximizing the price to satisfy all of the creditors.
Second quarter results for the Czech power company ČEZ were even more disappointing than expected, showing a drop of nearly 40% year-on-year to 6.72 billion crowns when they were leaked to the internet on Monday. Analysts had predicted a slump due to lower prices of electricity sold and unfavorable trends in the crown-to-euro rate, but expected the drop to be more in the vicinity of 11%. Profits were also brought down by new taxes on emissions vouchers and the solar energy plant tax. ČEZ was to publish its results on Tuesday before stock markets opened. However, the Reuters news agency found them posted on a part of the company's website. ČEZ put the leak down to poor internet security and said the problem had already been fixed.
The Czech National Bank released a prognosis this week according to which the Czech Republic will meet most of the Maastricht conditions for adopting the euro next year. The bankers estimate that the government will manage to put the deficit for 2012 under 3% GDP, with state indebtedness remaining relatively low at 41.8% of GDP. Likewise, conditions on interest rates and low inflation should be met by next year. Lastly, the crown-euro exchange rate should fluctuate by no more than 15% for a two-year period, all that allowing the euro to be put into use in the Czech Republic in 2016. Nonetheless, Prime Minister Petr Nečas refuses to be drawn on the when question. He said this week that setting a date for adopting the euro would not be good for the country. Moreover, he said the current debt crisis in the eurozone is turning the euro into something it had not been when the Czech Republic joined the EU in 2004.
Thank you, Christian Falvey, for that. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Next up, Jan Wellinger talks to the author of a new webcomic that is attracting readers on the internet.
In this week's Arts, my guest is Welsh writer James Stafford. He is the author of a wonderfully irreverent and striking new webcomic called The Sorrowful Puto of Prague. The comic tells the story of a 400-year-old puto, or cherub, named Xavier. He lives in the city, and the story has captured the attention of both Czech and English speakers. After looking up the site myself, I was curious to learn more, and I was very happy that James Stafford, who is not usually based in Prague, was able to come into the studio. He begins first by talking about how the project came together.
Well, basically, I've always wanted to do a comic, and I've been coming to Prague now for 10 years, and I'm very much interested in the architecture and the art, and I love Baroque art especially, and if you go around anyone who's been to Prague, the city's full of putai or cherubs. And I've always been interested in the contrast between you get these beautiful little baby or kitsch, you know, tacky things, and they're, you know, in a picture with some saint being burned alive or dragged to hell. You know, you have these, it's just a strange contrast. And I was looking for something to base a comic on in Prague, and I thought it was a kind of a symbol that's around Prague a lot, and it allowed me, I thought it would visually be very interesting to have a puto or cherub doing something you wouldn't expect it to be doing. So I just kept seeing them and they kept sticking out in my mind. So when I decided to do a comic about Prague, I just settled on that.
So if you take a puto or a cherub and you describe some of the characteristics there, Did you go with type or against it with your main character?
To pin the context, I decided to have this character that had been in Prague for 400 years. And I thought, you know, if you've been around Prague 400 years, you would have seen everything from empires, wars, communism, fascism. And the Puto was almost incidental. Once I found a character, I wanted to do something you wouldn't expect with him. So it looks like this cute baby, angelic thing. And I decided, you know, if you'd lived in Prague for four centuries, you'd probably be cynical. You'd probably be a drunk. You'd probably be a bit romantic too. And I like the idea of having this cynical 400-year-old character that looks like an innocent angelic baby. And there's lots of stories written we haven't done yet. It's going to explore that kind of what it would actually be like to have all those experiences in Prague for so many years and to see so much and to deal with the boredom of it as well. You know, so I just like the visual contrast. I thought was interesting. It worked in a comic. It wouldn't necessarily work as a book or a novel, but I thought as a comic it would be an interesting contrast to work with.
Obviously, Baroque is a period that is very much associated with this city. Do you think that it's, say, an image or imagery that's overused at times?
Definitely, and that's partly what I wanted to play with. And I think people forget. What's interesting, when you first come to Prague, when I first did 10 years ago, you think it must be a very religious people and a very Catholic country. And obviously, you know, the Baroque was basically after, you know, the famous Battle of White Mountain. It was propaganda of the 16th, 17th century. So I think, and we will play with that, it is an overplayed image. And that's what I wanted to do, is have this character that people might think, oh, it's a very proud character to have or imagery. And then when you see the things he does or experiences. And also I made a point, the second issue, if anyone's read it, is set in Žižkov, in a communist housing block, is to take these Prague symbols and put them somewhere you don't expect. So it's not just Gothic Prague and Baroque Prague, but it's a city of many things. And that's why I love Prague so much. It isn't just Baroque, it's Gothic, it's social realism, it's Art Nouveau. So I think that's why he was such a good character to go with, is it twists the expectations. And if anyone's read the comic, the first sort of two pages probably look like how you'd expect it to look. And then you kind of get this change of something very mundane and very boring. You know, his foot stuck in a drain, or in the second series comic where he's in a housing block. And I think, again, that was why I was so attracted. Once I found that character, it's just so many contrasts you can play with. And Prague's very schizophrenic, you know, it has all sides, but it's obviously sold on the Baroque and Renaissance and things.
We will, of course, discuss the imagery of the comic itself. But before we do, I'd also still like to ask about how many names you went through before you hit upon the final one.
Xavier. Well, the first name, Xavier or Xavier, again, depending what you want to say. I've always liked the name. And I forgot it's a big character in X-Men, which I've never really read. But I got it from a Saint Xavier. There's a statue on Charles Bridge. And I've always liked the X at the beginning of the name. And so I kind of... And then there was a famous rugby player who had that name. So I kind of, that was pretty easy. I liked the name. And the full name, Xavier of the Sorrowful Snows, comes from these Catholic churches you get, you know, the Church, the Lady of Our Snows, or the Church of Our Lady of Victory. These kind of poetically Baroque names. So I like the word sorrowful. It's in a lot of Baroque art or some of the churches. And I like the word snows. So I kind of crossed these two church names together. And it sounded very deliberately overly poetic and obscure. So it was fairly quick. It was a combination of different phrases I kept hearing in Prague, or saints I kept seeing. Mm-hmm. So that was how that came about.
What are some of the kinds of adventures or situations that he gets himself into or finds himself in?
Well, one of the exciting things, and again, I probably have a dozen stories written that we're working on to draw, but I wanted the 400-year time period to work with. And the first few issues are set in modern-day Prague. And there's one in the 70s where the communists find some kind of miraculous vision and they don't quite know what to do with it, so they destroy it because it doesn't help them in any way. So, but there's going to be things dealing with, in the long term, just after White Mountain. He's going to have a central kind of tragic role in that. But it also... There's going to be a future storyline where he's, you know, Prague's become in many ways a normal city. It's got its Burger King's, its McDonald's. There's a reference in the first story to how he has a day job in a supermarket. Because again, if you've been around 400 years, you know, you've got to do something with your time. And it's going to reflect on the mundaneness of modern cities. And there's the next story, which goes online in a few weeks, is kind of playing with the cliches of Malastrana and the ghosts and the legends. It's going to be a little bit of a twist on that. So I think it's going to be all sorts of things. And also I wanted to get Rudolph II in there somewhere, and he'll be coming up in the future. So I think there's just a whole cast of mythology to play with, and to kind of twist it, not just to be Golden Prague cliches, but to play with it. And that's why I think it's such a exciting character to have that 400 years to play with.
All of these elements will be easily recognizable for Czechs, but you'll be able to cast them in a new light.
Yeah.
But of course, the comic is not just for Czechs. It's in English.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to get the balance, especially in the early issues, of having to play with these obvious cliches. Obvious, the Golem, he's already been referenced shortly, but to have these obvious ones, anyone can. And also, there is a few subtle things that are little references or literary references that someone who really knows their Czech history or would pick up on. And again, I think it's striking the balance between playing with the obvious Prague legends that people would know, especially Czechs, and also bringing out some great obscure anecdotes I've come across over the years, or little tales that I want to kind of work on. So it's kind of trying to have the discipline to not rush in and use too much as well. So luckily, drawing comics is a slow process, so it's making me be patient. But it was very exciting.
It sounds like you're having fun with it.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not uncommon, though, especially in the field of comics, for one person to be the writer, for somebody else to do the artwork.
Yeah, no, it's very common. And it's actually, I joke saying I'd like to draw, but I'm actually quite happy. I found the artist, AJ Bernardo, who's the main artist. We've had a guest artist too. But what's great, he's been doing comics for a few years, and he thinks visually. I like to think I'm thinking visually, but sometimes he just changes a panel. I write down the way I want it drawn and give him freedom to interpret, obviously. And sometimes he'll say to me, well, you know, why don't we make this two panels or make this one? And it's been really enjoyable because he's brought out certain things that I wouldn't have thought, or because it's telling stories with writing and visually is very different. And he has those skills I've never had. So it's also been a great collaboration, and I've really enjoyed. And it's amazing the difference changing the position of a character in a panel or just the way the hands are, to how much you can change a story or a feel. So it's been a good learning experience too, and I like to think I'm getting better at thinking like that too.
You actually led into my next question, which was, what is the collaborative effort like? Do you get surprised by some of the results? Maybe we could talk about a concrete example.
Yeah, well, the next issue example, it's set in Malastrana, and I won't go too much away, but it's involving the ghost of a hanged man who hangs around Malastrana forever. No one can see him. He's bored for eternity, kind of hanging there. And I set up what I thought was a very nice panel description. I send the artist by email pictures I've taken in Prague or street references, and I lay out panel one will be a street, panel two, etc. And it's a very static imagery. It's this guy hanging off a lamppost, and that's all it is for most of the comic. So he was able to turn it into something very dynamic, and he, just by changing angles of the characters are coming from, or the way Xavier comes into shot that I would never have thought of, it gives it this very, it becomes a very atmospheric comic, very eerie. And the best one on page two, Xavier has wings, and he announces his arrival by a feather falling. So you see the feather falling before you see him. And it's something I wouldn't have thought of, and it really kind of added to the atmosphere. So those kind of things, he just comes back with a feather falling, and I'm very excited because I would never have thought of it.
That sounds clever.
Yeah, it's great, and it shows you how artists think compared to how people who write think. So those kind of things, when he sends me those emails, when I see that sketches, I run out of adjectives. So I write back saying how great it is.
And where is the artist based?
He's a Filipino artist, and he's based in the Philippines. This is one of the exciting things with the internet. When I decided to do a comic, I had to find an artist, and I didn't know any. And I started hanging out on internet forums where they have these, you can advertise for or respond to things. And I had two false starts over a year and a half with artists I started with, and either they didn't finish or they didn't quite get the project. And I just did a few adverts on forums, nothing. And then suddenly I got an email from AJ, and it was a great response. It was a really funny response. And he got the comic. I could sense he got it. And I remember thinking, when I opened his portfolio, please be able to draw, because you know, you get some portfolios and, you know, and he knew exactly what, and I knew straight away he was the one I would love to work with. And luckily, because he writes, he does a lot of comics, and we've worked out a schedule to work together. And so, yeah, it's 10, 15 years ago, I don't know what I would have done, because I don't know how to find the comic book artist. So that's a great thing about the internet.
And has he been here?
No, his name's Angelo, so he's named after an angel. And apparently, he told me his mother has lots of Cupids or Putai or cherubs, whatever you want to call them, in the house. So he had some three-dimensional reference points as well when he was designing the character. So it's quite appropriate. It has the name Angel. His name means angel, and his mother had a lot of models he could work with. So it was quite a nice. But he would love to come here, and I'm hoping one day.
And you haven't met yet?
Never met him, no. But I'm hoping one day I can meet up with him here, especially.
One of the advantages of having a web comic is that it doesn't only have to be visual. Mm-hmm. There are other elements as well. And I was intrigued to read that a musician for The Cure did the music for one of the episodes.
The last episode, yeah. I mean, for anyone, I've had The Cure in my bedroom or posters of The Cure for years. And I first got into them in Prague as a student, actually. Basically, I used to be in a band and I have a lot of musician friends. I used to play guitar and I've always been into ambient music and soundtrack music, or music generally. And when I write, I'm always listening to music when I write, and it inspires me. And I decided that I wanted to have the website. It's a comic at the moment and a music, but I wanted it to be like my own little tribute to Prague. And I have some photography on there. There'll be more of that. And I decided, well, I've listened to so much music writing this, and I listen to so much music in Prague, and it's a very musical city. It would be great to have, for every issue of the comic, music to it, like a soundtrack that's optional. It's not something that comes on by choice, but you click on the right page. And I have lots of musician friends, so I basically talked to a few of them, and they thought it was a great idea. So the first three comics, I had friends who have bands or doing stuff. And then the fourth story was kind of was a reference to a Cure album, Disintegration, which is my favorite thing ever, not just music, my favorite piece of art. And the comic was looking nice. It was getting some feedback. The website looks nice. So I just thought the keyboardist has a solo career as well, doing ambient music. And I thought, I wonder if I could fire him and write him a letter and see what he'd say to contribute in something, because it'd be great to have someone from The Cure doing music for a comic involving The Cure. And I actually decided to send a snail mail, an actual letter rather than an email, and I sent him piles of artwork and ideas and explained it. And unbelievably, within like 4 days, I think he got back and said, yeah, it sounds interesting. And I didn't know, you know. And then he sent me a few samples and asked if, you know, should I? And I'm like, you do what you want to do, you know. And so that was great. So it's there. It's really nice. Some really nice ambient or soundtrack music. And it just gives the comic that extra thing. And I think, you know, some people have said to me, you know, I'm not into comics, but the music's nice. So that's been great. And it's been a dream come true to have someone from a band like that take the project seriously.
Okay, well, no, let me thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much for
having
me on. I appreciate it.
That edition of The Arts by Jan Wellinger was the final part of our English show today. If you have any comments or questions, don't hesitate to get in touch. You can contact us at email at english@radio.cz. or send us a letter to Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2. But for now, from myself, Jan Richter, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.